Hi, I'm Natalie Gochner. You are listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I represent the political center and have with me on the political right, Senator Dan McKay.
Hey, everybody.
And on the political left, Jim DeBacchus.
Citizen Jim DeBacchus. Hello.
Dropped the senator title. Gentlemen,
so painful.
We sit here today with our federal government in
paralysis.
Yeah.
Day
and in
27.
The longest shutdown in our nation's history.
Keep it going.
I spent the last 2 days in Washington, endured a snowstorm, but also noticed, you know, they didn't clean up after the snow. People are falling and slipping because there's nobody out doing anything.
Yeah.
All the Smithsonians had a sign. I wanted to take a picture of them that said, due to the government shutdown, these are closed.
Yeah.
It was stunning to me what an embarrassment it is that we have that much dysfunction right now. I don't see it. Dan, I'll go to you first. Since we have a Republican in the White House, I just don't see the purpose in this.
Well, of course you do. Nobody wants to admit it. It's negotiations, all right? This is all negotiation posturing, right? Mm-hmm. Trump has decided he is, you know, the old Viking thing, right? Where you burn the boats.
Mm-hmm.
Trump has burned the boats. Mm-hmm. And he is not going to, and unfortunately, so he's on one island and his ships have been burnt. And Pelosi is on the other island, and she has burnt the boats on the other side. And so they're both pointing fingers at each other, and at the same time, nothing's getting done. And it's all negotiation. And they're all saying, who has more to gain, who has more to lose? And this is, in my opinion, the epitome of politics as usual in D.C.
It seems so selfish to me, whether it personally selfish or selfish, partisan selfish. Because, you know, if a husband and wife are fighting, you expect eventually some maturity to come out. In this case, it's public service. You know, you expect the mantle of the office to command something greater. So when I was in Washington, I'll get your comments, Jim, but I'm thinking about our founding documents. I'm thinking about the sacred monuments there. And all of this just flies in the face of that.
You have worked for a governor. There is no way your glasses are this rosy, Natalie.
No, they are.
Come
on. When it comes to public service, there
is no way your glasses are this rosy.
They are rosy. Jim, let's hear your comments, and then I'm happy to take some
okay.
I'm some rosy, flack. Too. I mean, okay. I just believe in the system. It just tears me apart. I mean, I hate to hear this as negotiation, because it's not negotiation about a border or a wall. It's a negotiation about political things. I mean, we're talking about $5.7 billion, which is less than 0.1%. It's not about the money. It's just about a temper tantrum by the president. I believe that's absolutely true.
At least it's a fake crisis, Dan.
And then Pelosi.
There is no crisis on the southern border.
Pelosi, on the other hand, sees political advantage in having this thing hold out. The president has created this island, and he's going down, and so there's a stalemate there, and it's all decided by whose political situation is better. Somebody, and you know who it might be? It might be McAdams and Curtis that actually solve this, because out of our delegation, those two have decided not to take the money. Mitt Romney, who really needs the money, isn't. Poor McAdams, no dough. He's sleeping on couches. Won't get no salary. I'll probably take it when everybody else gets it. But I say to Curtis, who didn't take it first, and McAdams, good for you. The old fat guys that have been there for years, they would never think about turning their salary in, Bishop and Stewart and Lee. But the two new guys are going, we want to do things differently.
Okay, so I'm just going to, with something we never do, I'm just going to play an audio clip. It's like 7 seconds, if you'll sustain it.
We can do
it.
Let's see seconds.
See if this will work. Oh, come on. Well, apparently I don't know how to use the internet.
We now have an actual humanitarian crisis on the border that only underscores the need to drop the politics and fix our immigration system once and for all.
Okay.
All right.
That voice.
That was President Obama.
Okay, thank you. That's not President Trump.
Mm-hmm.
That is President Obama
talking
about
a humanitarian crisis.
A humanitarian but a crisis nonetheless, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So that was back in the Gang of Eight and everybody talking about why we need immigration reform. It was a crisis then. It is a crisis today. Today, Arizona reported that they had students go out and comb the Arizona desert just south of the Air Force Base, where they actually do live testing with ammunition on the Air Force Base down there, found 127 bodies or remains of people who walked through that field. And all I'm going to say is, I don't know how long we need to continue to have bad immigration policy. But in my opinion, immigration is the biggest problem we have as a country next to our debt and our debt financing. So shutting down the government, saving some costs there, and at the same time, leveraging to get both sides to deal with something immigration-wise, in my opinion, big win. It is painful to watch us have to go through a shutdown. I wish there was some, you know, Jim and I talked about this last week. I wish there was an opportunity where we could fund this thing a week at a time and keep everybody negotiating. But until the gun is to the head of, figuratively, everyone, mm-hmm. Until the gun is to the negotiators, I am telling you, no one wants to deal with this hot button issue. And I know everybody, it's painful, but I will tell you, President Trump, I'm hopeful his administration will do more for immigration reform and be able to find a deal better than any president has in the past.
Madam Moderator, may I ask the gentleman from Riverton a question?
You have my permission.
Okay, so let's give it your way. A giant crisis is on the border. Give Trump his $5.7 million. Boom, there it goes. It's all over. No crisis, no humanitarian. The wall's going up there. It's done. I mean, this has nothing to do with a crisis other than a political crisis for Donald Trump.
And I would argue that is the problem with Washington, right? And that's the problem with this whole compromise or the whole idea of the wall being the only issue. If I was Trump, I would be bargaining for both. And if I was the Democrats, yeah. I'd go build some freaking boat, Speaker Pelosi, and I'd float over to the island with a doggone immigration package that can actually be signed.
I would too.
Dan, you came out pretty strongly there. I really want to take you on about it. We don't have time on the air, so I'll look forward to some good conversations off the air. I did notice, though, that you very much pivoted towards immigration reform rather than the wall.
Yeah.
And I think that's positive because immigration is a huge problem in our country.
Huge.
Huge problem. We can solve immigration and not shut down our government. In fact, by shutting down the government, we get in the way of solving it.
Unfortunately, the parties, the Democratic Party and the Republican parties, are equally guilty here.
There's
they
some
both
blame
go
going
to,
both
they
ways.
They want to both go to their corners and their islands and live
together. So closer to home, we have 10,000 roughly furloughed federal employees in Utah. Mm-hmm. We have Hill Air Force Base and the IRS center up in Ogden, you know, feeling the pain. Mm-hmm. Northern Utah's got to be feeling this by now.
No doubt.
All the public land.
The public land employees in these communities, the gateways to our national parks. Mm-hmm. There is a economic and therefore a human cost to what's going on here. We should demand better from our government.
Okay, I'm in. Let's how about this? Let's kick Congress out of D.C. Let's put all those decisions in Utah where they all belong anyway for the state of Utah. And for the most part, let's make those federal lands decisions here on a local level. Let's make a lot of those decisions that you're talking about that are really inconveniently made and get caught up in D.C. crap. And let's solve the problems here in Utah. Because someone said something to me the other day. Our problems in Utah are Utah-sized, and we can always come up with Utah solutions. Mm-hmm. The problem is when you take Utah solutions and tie them up in the quagmire that is D.C., we never get anything
done. You know, I hear this about all these wonderful Utah solutions. We do everything perfect. Why are we 50th in funding? Why haven't we figured that out? Why are we turned down hundreds and hundreds of billions of dollars on Medicaid expansion? We know how to figure all this out. Why do we have CITLA, which is controlled by the state, the entity that goes and sells off public lands, that creates barriers, that gets the public out of there time after time to give to the fossil fuels? It scares me even more than having Washington do it to have Utah solutions on so many things, because the legislature is completely unresponsive to the people.
So back to Washington, but using a Utah senator, Mike Lee, he's backing a bill that would prevent future government shutdowns. It basically works like this. if they don't fund, if Congress fails to pass a budget, spending would be cut by 1% after the first 120 days and then 1% every 90 days until there's a spending plan passed and signed by the president. It basically takes away the shock of a shutdown.
Okay. So what Senator Lee is doing is the Utah solution, Jim. The reason the Utah government never shuts down and the reason we don't get into budget problems is because we pass a budget that basically does something similar. It memorializes the when we do it in the very beginning of the session, we have to do it in the first week. And the reason we do it that week is the governor has to sign it by the end of the session, at which point, if he vetoes it, we just get back into session and we're just already in session
and
we pass it.
I don't know.
So Lee's solution is just Utah.
From both a public policy and an economic perspective, I don't think these drastic things are good for our country.
I
like things that solve problems.
I think it's rich that Mike Lee is coming up with a solution to government shutdowns when he and his buddy from Texas shut down the federal government and it cost $23 billion last time he pulled his stunt. And I suppose he's paying it off by $100 a month.
Think about the bill. He's a fiscal conservative that wants to cut expenses anyway, so he's cutting. He wins either way with this
bill.
It's
propaganda
bill. Keeps the government open, and he cuts it 1%.
We have lots more to talk about. We'll do it in our next segment. I'm with Dan McKay and Jim DeBacchus. Natalie Gochner, stay tuned.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on KCPW. For more episodes of all our in-house podcasts, click on the Local Programs tab at kcpw.org. And while you're there, please consider a donation to KCPW to support public radio in your community.
Dan McKay on the right.
Jim DeBacchus on the left.
Natalie Gochner in the Political Center. You are listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. By the way, on the immigration front, I just wanted to mention that...
Natalie did beat me up during the break, and she's right. So.
Well, that we have former Mexican President Vicente Fox coming to the U on February 12th. So something for people to watch for.
Hey,
let's hope he gets a visa.
That's what we talked about in the break.
Hey, I mentioned
and people want to know this, right?
I mentioned I was in D.C. this week. I had the chance to go on the Senate floor with Senator Lee and Senator Romney and just kind of have them tell their story, show some things. But I saw where Senator Romney's desk is.
Oh, yeah.
It was pretty interesting. So if you think of a front dais and then you think of the chairs that array around it, Mike Lee has managed now a spot on the front row.
Yeah.
That's
supreme.
That's supreme. Front row's the best, and front row center's the best. He's on the flank.
Yep.
Senator Romney had the choice between the second to the last row and the last row, and he picked the last row just to be at the back. So he's on the flank and in the back. He's going to have fun back there.
I like being on the last row in the Senate.
That's what he said. He wants easy entry and exit.
Because you can go and people don't know you're coming and going. You sit up in the front, everybody knows.
Nobody shows up
there
to a Senate session anyways. Yeah. They so infrequently use their chamber desks.
Let's talk. Can anybody go on the Senate floor as a guest of a senator, or do you have to have two? Or how does that even work? That seems
with members of Congress.
Have you been on there
too? If you have
amazing,
a member of Congress, they can bring you on.
They can do
really?
Things.
Mm-hmm.
Not during session, but
Wow.
So another thing I noticed, just our listeners might find this interesting. So you have this subway or shuttle system between underground between the Capitol and the Senate office buildings in this case. So Senator Romney still hasn't gotten his permanent office, because if you imagine, all the seniority things are working through. Mm-hmm. And for those that want to move, it takes several weeks. And so it's going to take some time before he gets in his permanent office. So you basically get off the little underground shuttle.
Yeah, and his office is right there.
It's right there. It's in the basement around the red brick. And it just tells you, when people talk about being a junior senator or not having seniority, it's coming. Like, he's going to move to a better spot. Sure. But it was just sort of humbling to see.
And those spots get assigned based on fundraising.
Okay, well, we got to ask you a little bit. So did you have lunch with both of them in the Senate, or do you have it separately? Do they even like each other?
They're doing great. I had it was breakfast in the Senate dining room, guest of the two senators. I was with several people from Deseret News, and Senator Lee knows his stuff, and he's using that, his experience, to introduce it to Mitt Romney.
Yeah, I think it's great.
And but if they were together, they would pretend, like if you had Romney and Hatch together, if you had Hatch and Lee together, they would pretend that they liked each other when we all knew they hated each other.
In this case, I think it's genuine.
You think it's genuine?
And I definitely feel it among their staffs.
All right.
I interact more with the staffs, and they're talking a lot and doing their thing, so...
Huh.
Yeah. I also see, by the way, John Curtis and his staff doing the same thing with Congressman McAdams.
Yeah.
Helping to kind of show him along. And interestingly, in the Cannon House Office Building, that's where Bishop Curtis and McAdams are. And they're all in the same hallway, all by each other, which I thought was wonderful.
How did that happen by seniority?
I think McAdams, you know, the Hart took a smaller office to be by him.
No, maybe, but probably not. The Hart Building is being renovated.
But that's for Senate, so that's not going to help in
Sorry,
this
not
situation.
The Hart Building. Which
Longworth.
Building are they in? They're in Longworth. No.
Cannon, Longworth.
I think they're in Cannon is where they all three are in the same hallway.
Yes.
That building is being renovated, and they're slowly kicking Congress people out of the office. Rob Bishop chose his office because it was the last in the renovation project.
Got it.
And McAdams and and Curtis chose their offices in the same wing because they will be renovated. But anyways, that being said, they're not looked at as good offices because you've got to leave them in the next 2 years.
I got you.
So at the moment, they
I was just
good.
So
moment,
happy.
Good,
yeah, I, got so, it. I was
cool.
happy to see them close together. Yeah. Hey, I want to turn to a local issue. You have the Valley Visioning Project taking place in Utah Valley, Utah County. Just to set this up, so the institute I lead does a lot of economic and demographic work. Utah County is the place to watch. Their job growth has been exceptional over the past 24 months. If you take Utah County out of the state, Utah's ranking among states falls from the fastest growing economy to the fifth fastest growing economy. Mm-hmm. That's how much of the shoulders is being, how much of Utah's economy is being carried on Utah County's shoulders. You know, they're going to add 1 million people over the next 50 years. They will be the size of Salt Lake County by 2065. Mm-hmm. Wow.
Not soon enough, Jim. We need more Utah County, and we need it soon.
I'm glad I'll be long gone by the
Jim,
time Utah
Jim, the way
Utah
for you
County
to think about this is
over.
That power, economic power, demographic power, political power is shifting south.
It's already shifting. There's not one person in leadership from Salt Lake County. Shame on the Republicans. Shame on the Republicans. You know, that's no way to run a state. And too many things go from out in these circles of buddies in Davis and Weber County and in Utah County and rural county. Salt Lake City is simply, and Salt Lake County are not well represented.
I will say, though.
And I'm talking about in leadership, Dan.
If you're in Utah County, you're going to see every last field turn into a home. Those beautiful orchards are going to be at risk.
Yeah.
There's going to be congestion.
Yeah.
I mean, there you pay a price for growth.
Well, and that's why we're looking at, you know, diversifying where we're growing our major office and job components, right? Moving it to the Point of the Mountain, I think, has been not only largely but really positive. It's shortcutted the exchange, it's shortcutted the commute and help with some of those transportation needs. We have some short-term growing pains on some of those intersections, mm-hmm. but no question, in 50 years, Lehigh area, that, I mean, we need room for another downtown.
Dan, does your Senate district cross over the county boundary?
It does. So yeah, I've got, in fact, my district is the whole Point of the Mountain area.
Wow.
And so it is.
Dan, that's truly maybe the biggest congestion.
Utah County is not. Oh
no, right there at the Point of the Mountain on the Utah County side. It's I'm not blaming you, obviously, but it just seems like a nightmare there. Can you imagine if? Is there a plan on the books?
Are you talking about transportation? Or you're just talking
about
the people there give you a nightmare.
Yeah, well, both. But I mean that
hey,
transportation there. You know, your people need to expand their.
Well. I will say the demographics are quickly changing for Utah County as much as they are for Salt Lake County.
Growing, getting older,
growing,
diversifying,
exactly.
In race, ethnicity.
All of those things are happening for Utah County just like they are for Salt Lake County.
Let me ask you, Qualtrics, as long as we're down there,
sold
for $8 billion. This is a startup. I mean, they're 4 or 5 years old. They're not even generational. My sense is that's not good for Utah. I mean, I saw what happened to WordPerfect, for example. The big international players come in and we become a component and there's less local control and sometimes they just shift out whole departments. And I don't know any of the players. I don't know the background story, but it always makes me nervous.
When you see them buying out.
When you see them come rolling in and boom, there they go.
The Smith family maintained a lot of control in that, so I'm not as worried about that, you know, about divisions disappearing, so to speak. But yeah, I mean, you know, anytime, but they're not the only one, Jim. I'm saying you know, I'm getting invited just because I'm involved in that Point of the Mountain area. I'm getting involved in some kind of grand opening for a new office once a week right now. Hey, come take a look at our offices.
The, I'll call it commercial office space in Lehigh rivals that of downtown, not in total, but in the new office space since 2010. Mm-hmm.
Before we leave this, I want to ask Dan in particular, but Natalie, you know all this stuff too. I mean, when I go to DOMA, where I was recently at Ancestry and went around, you go in the lunchroom there and see those young faces, LDS and not, and they look out those glorious views. They don't have that old Utah County Commission view of tear everything down, build it, pave it over, blah, 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 blah. That kind of 1950s growth, 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 growth.
Yeah, they're ready for Trax extension to Adobe.
Yeah,
you know, they're ready for light rail.
Is everything already going to be destroyed in Utah County by the time that generation has their say?
I think they're already having their say. I think it's already coming together. And that's why the Valley Visioning Project should be good. Related but not limited to Utah County, the Utah economy. So this is what I do professionally, but I wanted to just mention to the two of you, last 3 months, the job growth has tipped, you know, slower. It's dropping. It's moderating.
That'll be in the governor's state of the state, no doubt, leading it off.
What do you guys see?
Well, we're seeing home new home sales, you know, plateau, not really. I mean, as I talk to builders, you know, they're working with buyers and they're still able to get closings. You know, it's not, they don't have the line out the door that they had, you know, 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. So we're seeing some of those change as well. But we're still seeing, you know, we're still seeing moderate to same growth patterns we had last year. And at least as far as, you know, the real estate and land side of things that I see. And so, you know, I think, you know, if we're looking at it, we're seeing, hey, it might be good for things to slow down a little bit so that we can kind of get our feet under us because we've been running pretty fast.
Jim, 4 of our last 5 governors have all had to deal with a slowdown. So I'm leaving Olene Walker off the list because she was governor for just under a year and it was just good economic times. But Mike Leavitt had the dot-com 9/11 post-Olympic slowdown. Huntsman had the Great Recession, and Bangeter had the stagflation of the early 80s. You could say that Herbert had some of the last recession, but how do you think Herbert will handle a economic environment that isn't high growth like it's been?
That's a good question.
Because you know, it's a tailwind when you have a strong economy. Everything's easier.
If you look at the 10 years that he will have been in office, I mean, the only claim to fame he has is, I've had this great economy, and I made it, I created it. And there's nothing signature. There's nothing you can point. I mean, it's been like a blob occupying the governor's chair, and he just kind of is there and says, well, I had a great economy. And so if it
all goes... I have to support our good governor when I hear him talk like that. Because
if it all goes down, I don't know what the blob will say.
There's been things in manufacturing. There's been things in tech. The Mighty Five has been under his, you know, leadership. He's done a lot of good things for the economy. He's certainly run a tight shop. A state government's become more efficient. So I don't see it that way, but I just wonder how he'll handle... slower growth, because it requires a different mindset.
You know, I always have things to say about Governor Herbert until I start looking at a bunch of those southern, particularly goofball governors, you know, like that guy in Texas, and they just come out. So, I mean, I'm not totally demeaning Governor Herbert. You know, he's done a credible job. He's been fine. He's been all right. I would give him a good C-, but nonetheless, where's the vision, Governor?
Yeah. We are so close to gripes, but really quickly, really, really quickly, and I'll go to Dan, what are we going to see on Medicaid expansion and the initiative in this session?
There's a lot of newsprint
out there about how the legislature is going to go overrun the people.
Yeah, I think you might, again, like marijuana, like every other issue, I can already hear Jim's engine, you know, his little factory getting started. So I'll say that, you know, when an initiative is in front of the people, it's a yes or no. It's a binary. They can't offer amendments. They can't propose changes or whatever. We need to shore up to make sure that Medicaid expansion is sustainable for the state of Utah.
I'll be interested to see the specifics.
And it's going to be
tough. Let's talk about them next week. quick gripes. Jim, let's go to you first.
My gripe is that the governor and the legislature are messing around with Medicaid expansion. The people were clear. There's nothing sophisticated. It's a yes or no. People understood it. 34 other states have it. Just take it and swallow your stupid pride, Utah legislature. That's my gripe.
Wow.
Dan, your gripe.
I will say about this time of year, I'm always completely overwhelmed between meetings, between, you know, trying to get my bills together and trying to get ready for the session, trying to take care of my professional life so I can take
family,
6 weeks
business,
off.
Family, business, and public service.
All of those things. And so my gripe is I am percolating at the top of my availability and
out of capacity.
But I signed up for it, so nobody feel bad. It's just
my own little gripe. You look like you're holding up well. My gripe is going to be President Trump serving fast food to college football champs when Clemson came to the White House. What in the world?
I kind of like that.
What in the world?
It had to be cold by the time he served. I did not understand
that'd be terrible.
That meal choice.
You've been listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. Natalie Gochner joined by Dan McKay and Jim DeBacchus. Our program's produced by Anthony Scoma.
Hand me
Thank
a Big
you.
Mac.
Thank you for listening.